Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand.
That's who else but Frank Sinatra. Since his death in 1998, hundreds of books and articles have glorified or trashed the legendary crooner. Songbooks, biographies, unauthorized biographies. But one stands out for the author's proximity to the singer. It's called Mr. S, My Life with Frank Sinatra. It's by George Jacobs, along with writer William Stadium. Jacobs was Sinatra's personal valet for nearly two decades. He and Stadium say the book was a long time in the works.
One time, Sammy Kahn, the songwriter, said to me, we were doing some recordings, he said, keep a pad and pencil in your pocket. He said, if he go to the bathroom, write it down.
George had thousands of pages of notes, but it was very disorganized, so it was like going through the archive in Iraq. It was so disorganized, but it was a lot of fun unearthing a lot of treasure.
Now, for the record,
yes,
you were employed as Frank Sinatra's personal valet, but it sounds like you were so much more than that. What was the nature of your relationship?
Well, it was mostly a companion and valet, and I was not treated as a servant. I was treated as an equal, like his family, because I went everywhere he went, witnessing most of the things that happened with him.
This is extraordinary because this is in the 50s and 60s, and for an African-American man who grew up in the segregated South, this was really quite amazing to see what you saw and go where you went with Frank Sinatra.
It was unbelievable, sweetheart. I was born in New Orleans, and when I came out of the Navy, I started working for a law firm. And from the law firm, I went with Swifty Lazard, a literary agent, from him to Sinatra. And that's how, you can't believe the people I met with him. Marlena Dietrich and Greta Garbo. In Palm Springs, when we first went down there, they were guests of his a weekend. And he asked me to fix breakfast for the ladies in the pool. Now, I'd seen a lot of movies, but I didn't know movie stars were live people. I was a young kid from the South. What did I know about white movie stars? So I'd go and I'd look in the pool, and the two of them are stark naked throwing water at each other. I almost had a heart attack.
It was a rude awakening, but George enjoyed it.
In the book, you note that people remember him as being somewhat fidgety, a ball of nervous energy, always pacing around the room from one end to the other. But you reveal that he was actually pacing all the time because he didn't want to sit down and crease his pants. Was he that much of a neat freak?
He was neat and immaculate. And his clothes were impeccable. Everything had to be just right.
But George did a whole a grooming ritual by spraying his hair black because he was having this receding hairline.
He was getting
bald
at the time, yeah, and the spotlight would bounce off of his head in the top.
And George also helped him with he wore a lot of makeup all the time because his face was badly scarred from a rough delivery when he was born, and he wore elevator shoes, and he wore a special girdle to hold him in. So there was a lot of grooming that George had to do, not only before performances, every day before Frank got out and met the public.
That was my job, and I got used to doing it, and then I knew how to do it. I would clean up hair pieces. I did everything personally for this man that nobody would ever remember. I remember clearly one dinner party he had, and I was standing at the head of the table watching him serve, and I had on one of his shirts with FS on the pocket. And he said, how come you're wearing my clothes? I said, Mr. West, I'm not wearing your clothes. He said, you're George Jacobs when I see an FS on the pocket. I said, that's not you. That's for fast service. The people fell off the table.
George was quick on his feet. That's what Frank liked about him.
And I had a great sense of humor. Anything they say, I would laugh about it. If he got angry with me, he'd say, hey, Spook, come here. And I'd do an Amos and Andy thing on us. Yes, sir, here he is. Don't do that Amos and Andy with me.
But they had a kind of racial humor that was so politically incorrect, none of it would fly today.
No. They did that out of joy. They didn't do that to hurt me, because if they did, I never would have stayed.
But he had a plane, and it was the nickname of the plane, the name on
it was El Dago.
El Dago, and then it was equal opportunity racism, but it still, it wouldn't fly today, but he wouldn't have understood it.
He did it with a smile on his face. He didn't do that to hurt nobody. This man had the greatest, biggest heart in the world. He did things for blacks that nobody in the world ever. There wouldn't have been a black worker in Vegas if it wasn't for him.
What did he do to open the doors for black workers?
He refused to work. He said he'd burn the hotel down if they didn't hire black musicians. When he went to Vegas, there were no black. At 6 o'clock, there couldn't be a black person on the strip. And he went to all of the hotels, and he knew the governor and the mayor. And he said, why aren't they all the great black musicians? They would be great here. And that's how it happened.
Hey there.
Yes?
I've never made a move.
You want to laugh, Sam? Go out and sit in the audience.
Hey there.
What the hell do you want, Sam? Baby.
Run to you. You think someday she will come to you. Better forget her.
You noted the Rat Pack, you know, always portrayed as this freewheeling group of guys, always the life of the party. But from what you write, it sounds like dealing with the Rat Pack was a bit of a hassle for Frank Sinatra.
And there was nothing rehearsed. Everything those guys did was ad-libbed. They didn't write no notes. They didn't keep no notes. Every joke they did, everything they said on stage, they knocked off it off each other. And then they would go back in the dressing room and laugh about the things they did because nobody could remember anything from one show to another. But they had fun. They enjoyed every minute of that.
But they had totally different styles. I mean, it was what went on stage didn't necessarily reflect a bacchanal at all times because Dean liked to go to sleep early.
And Joey Bishop was shy. Sammy was like the life of the party. And Dean, he would disappear after a certain amount. Dean didn't drink as much as people thought he did. He drank apple juice. Martindale's apple juice. I kept it in the dressing room. The guys enjoyed themselves. Humphrey Bogart gave him that name. Humphrey Bogart said, you guys are a bunch of rats. Beverly Hills rats. A whole pack of them, baby.
Frank Sinatra's legacy is larger than life. Does his legacy square with the man that you remember, George?
Yes. I think about him all the time. And now I work in his home where I grew up with him. I go and I do shows for tourists. In one of the houses, the first house we owned in Palm Springs, we filmed some stuff in there one morning about 5 o'clock in the morning, and on the pool you could see raindrops falling, and on the radio came Come Rain or Come Shine, and the cameraman said to me, I think this guy's watching over you.
George Jacobs, William Stadium, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Writer William Stadium and George Jacobs, Frank Sinatra's right-hand man, for almost 20 years.